Hello, listeners. This is Paula Scataloni. Transformative Harmonics is an academy for individual and planetary healing rooted in ancient wisdom and modern science. We are here for those who are interested in being guided back to soul so they can step into their signature frequency and be in service of humanity. If you've been looking for a place to land and settle down, develop community, and dive into the psyche and soma in a way that is supportive, trauma-informed, and integrative, then our programs are here for you now. Our monthly membership circle is available for those looking for a one or twice a month option for themselves and supported by my writings and somatic practices and sound journeys through Substack. Our immersive program is a deep dive into your own, your ancestral, and the collective, so you can go through your own initiation and transformation into your signature frequency with a small, intimate cohort. These groups are closed, and they only open every other month. So please reach out to me if you're interested in one of our upcoming groups. If any of these programs feel like they resonate with you, go to my website, paulascataloni.com, and fill out an application or sign up for a discovery call. I'm happy to meet with you and give you more information to help you make your decision. We would love to meet you and bring your wisdom into the circle.
Welcome. I'm your host, Paula Scataloni, the founder of Transformative Harmonics, a podcast that offers listeners a synthesis of ancient wisdom and modern science. Welcome to the Transformative Harmonics podcast. I'm Paula Scataloni, your host. I'm here today to talk about a topic that is dear to my heart because I've been utilizing the Akashic Records for providing soul-level journeys using music for quite some time, and I wanted to take another dive into it. And today, my guest is someone who I came across on a different podcast, and I thought she had a very interesting perspective about the Akashic Records and had even written a book about it. So I wanted to take that in and share that with the listeners if they would like to explore this. We are finding more and more people are starting to become trained in the Akashic Records, and so it behooves us to have a deeper understanding about them. Mary Medeiros is an advanced Akashic Records practitioner. She's an author and a three-time Emmy Award-winning television director whose career bridges the worlds of spiritual transformation and broadcast storytelling. Mary has opened the Akashic Records for individuals and corporations worldwide, offering soul-level guidance, healing, and divine remembrance. Her book, The Akashic Way, Living Through the Lens of the Akashic Records, shares direct transmissions from the records as a sacred offering for humanity's evolution. I have enjoyed my time with Mary, talking about her career, the Akashic Records, spirituality, creativity, and much, much more. I hope you enjoy this episode as much as I did. Hello, welcome back to Transformative Harmonics. I'm Paula Scataloni, your host. And today I'm very excited to have our guest here with us, Mary Medeiros. Before we start, I would like to take a moment, as always, to ask you to go ahead and slow down whatever it is you're doing so you can create some space for the information we're going to share today. Remembering that some of these things may stretch you. They may not be things you think about all the time. There may be questions that you hear these answers and you think, I don't have anywhere to put that yet. But regardless, creating the space and slowing down gives us a chance for possibility, for change. And things will start to eventually make sense if you are in a process of gathering information at this time. So let's go ahead and just have you look around, find the back of your chair, feel the support underneath your feet, and take one more breath with us before you start. Okay, Mary, thank you for being here.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
You are coming to us from the field of television production, moving from being an award-winning Emmy producer, a writer, a screenwriter, into the world of the Akashic Records.
And my journey in training in the Akashic Records is probably only a tip of the iceberg compared to where you have been. And I love that I came across you on a podcast with Sandy Sedgwick.
Sandy Sedgbeer.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. I love her. I love the way that she
very
presents.
Very special.
Yeah. And the merging of the science and the sacred. And since then, have taken some time to listen and read your book and just learn a little bit about your journey. And I thought it would be a beautiful opportunity for my listeners to take a deeper dive into the Akashic. They've heard me speak about it. Some of them have experienced it in my courses, but your book offers us just a more in-depth, I think, perspective of understanding it, of normalizing it, of making it very practical. And you cover such a wide range of topics that we're all grappling with at this time. So I'm so thrilled to start our conversation and to learn a little bit more.
Well, and your space and this space is a perfect space to be doing this. I just want to say that.
Great.
I can feel into it.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, for those that do not know you, I would like to give a small excerpt about your journey. I know that it's interesting. Two things about me and you, the connection is I used to hang out at the Bodhi Tree bookstore as well.
Oh.
And I know you talk about, following the impulse and the nudges. So I would like to hear just a little about your story of following the nudges. And because I think there's an opportunity to share what the awakening, how it happens over time. Because for you, it wasn't overnight, right?
Nope.
It was a process.
Yeah. Well, the nudging, I want to begin this by saying that the nudging is always coming from our higher self, always. This is quite often the way we discuss this at times. It sounds like it's, something outside of ourselves that's pushing us and whatever. Well, no, universe is listening to us. But we have a purpose. Our each soul, what I've learned and what I resonate with is that we as souls decide before we incarnate why we're coming to the planet at a particular lifetime. And by choice. So we have that choice. So my journey was kind of in an encapsulated rough childhood. Who hasn't, right?
Yeah.
In my family. Grew up in a Catholic family. Didn't quite understand aspects of the Catholic religion. It just didn't resonate with me as a very little person. I didn't understand coming in as sinners and we need salvation. And just, it never made sense to me. But I wasn't a rebel about it. I just thought, well, I think there's something that makes more sense. All right. So then I just sort of grew up and as we do. And I wound up going into television because I was always attracted to storytelling. I used to watch movies when I was very little. That was how I got away from the chaos in my house. I would just watch old movies till 3, 4, 5 o'clock in the morning. And what's very interesting that I wound up going in television and eventually soap operas, which thrives on storytelling. So I wound up as a director. So my journey was production into directing. And during that time, I always was feeling this leaning into metaphysical. There's more outside of third dimension. There's more outside of left brain thinking. I was really good at school, honors, all of that, learned all that stuff. But I always was feeling like, there's more. There's something else. So while I was working in television during those years, I think I'd worked on 7 soaps, East and West Coast. I was going to the Bodhi Tree bookstore in LA. I was listening to Eckhart Tolle when he first was out there. The usual, the Abraham Hicks. I used to attend their workshops all over. And, more and more, it wasn't even that I had this idea like, what I'm doing over here is not working. I got to get out of it. No, I really didn't. I enjoy especially working with actors. But you know what's interesting is in retrospect, I was bringing an aspect of myself always my entire life to my work, which was this ability to hear people, to hear another aspect of someone that maybe they're not hearing. Which is why the actors loved working with me, because I would mirror to them who they were on another level, but didn't know I was doing that. So at some point on the last soap I worked on, the executive producer called me up into her office and said, I'm not renewing your contract. And it was like, that had never happened to me. It was almost 30 years working in all the networks. And I was like, the floor dropped out. My human floor dropped out from under me. And there was no real reason given to me. I can't even remember what we talked about. And when I asked the actors if there was something I could do better, that maybe I missed something as a director, they were all shocked that I was leaving. So it was after that, a lot of grieving. We have this when we are in one direction. I will now say, I know it was my ego, Eckhart Tolle's ego conscious. My ego was keeping me, in a sense, trapped in this wonderful career. Who doesn't want to work on television shows and go to award shows and make great money? I was, and I didn't know it. But then what happened was when I was out, I was, again, not knowing what to do. And so because all I knew was television, and I didn't know that I knew what we're going to be talking about today. And so I was in an Akashic, I mean, I was in a psychic reading, and the reader saw a being over my shoulder. And she said, he's telling me he guards your Akashic records. And I asked, what are those? And she said, I don't know, but that's what he says he does. So I looked, you know, of course I went, I started to look them up. I gently knew them. It was very strange. It was like deep knowing. It wasn't, and I didn't really do much with it. And then I was in the Bodhi tree, and there was a book that was called my attention to it. It was sticking off the shelf above me in the back room. And I was alone back there, and I pulled the book down, and it was Linda Howe's book, How to Read Your Akashic Records. And I saw that. I just laughed. And I bought the book and I opened it and started reading. And I love the book because she guides us to begin with what she uses, which is a sacred prayer, but to begin opening our Akashic records. And when I did, I would hear blocks of thought that were not mine. I knew they were not mine. And they were so profound. It was like blowing me away. So I would write them. And that's how it began. That was back in 2008. And so I leaned into that. And the more I leaned into that, the easier everything got. My life got easier. I felt better. I felt more relaxed. I come to realize that was etched in my Akashic records that I would be working with this as a resource and helping people access their light and the love that they are through this resource, right? So, I mean, that was it. And then I studied with Linda through her center, and I went on to get an advanced accreditation. But the studying of the records is not studying the records. It's healing ourselves, yes. Not even healing, but learning more about ourselves through our own records.
Yes.
So much that we come to have a better understanding of everything that has happened in this life. And at times we're shown past lives. Because they all have a great impact on what we are, who we are, and what we're doing. So what I love about accessing the records is that we are being triggered to remember on a very deep level who we are. And what does that mean? Like, what are we here to do? And it sounds very esoteric and pie in the sky at times to people. However, we're given very specific things that triggers in us. The records don't tell us what to do. They show us through dialoguing with our own records, the higher beings that oversee our records. Through that dialogue, we come to know ourselves better, like amazingly better. And then that results in 100% of the time, empowerment, self-empowerment, divine empowerment. And yeah. So the more I worked with the records, with myself in my own records, and then when I began to work with people and I saw what was happening right in front of my eyes. I was watching divine in action and I was just like, okay, no, there's nothing that's better than this. So that's how I got to where I am.
Yeah. Yeah. Beautiful. So
two things that you've said that stand out. One is the ways in which the records give us a soul perspective, a different perspective to which understand ourselves, right? Which is that perspective. Would you say that that's connecting to our divine and then looking at our life and experiences through that?
Well, it's like if we could squeeze what you said into a little one ball of light, what it is it's showing us what already exists. It's showing us how we already exist, how we begin, because there's no time in the records. It's a quantum field. It's a quantum divine field. And we are that. So the records, language is very limiting, isn't it? When we're trying to convey these experiences and these ideas and these truths, perhaps, our language gets in the way. So the best way I can describe it is we don't learn anything new about ourselves at all. It is a mirror. It is literally a mirror. It's as if we look in the mirror and we see ourselves. So when we look in the mirror, are we seeing something different? Not really. However, how we feel when we see ourselves is going to be different because we're going to remember what we really are. And why do we have to remember? Because of third dimension and this life and this planet and how challenging it can be. And that gnarly ego conscious that Eckhart talks about, it is tricky. It's a trickster. And we have a lot of lies. We have an old paradigm that's filled with untruths, we know, that is crumbling away. And why is it crumbling away? Because there's only light. There's only light and there's only love. And we are that. So are we the records? Yes. Are the records us? Yes. So the best way I can describe this also is that because the records sit in the divine soup of God source itself, which is a higher vibration than what we're used to running around in. When we can raise our vibration through meditation, being in nature, it doesn't have to be meditation, music, absolutely music is like bing. I listen to the 111 hertz frequency, which is known as the holy frequency. And I can feel I'm in a different, so I'm raising myself, anyone working with their records, are raising themselves from an ordinary state of consciousness to a divine state of consciousness. And it would make sense that once we raise our vibration to that same vibration, we're going to hear it. We're going to hear the imprints that are there in a sense. The imprints contain everything that every soul, each of us as a soul, has done, said, experienced throughout every single lifetime. And it all is still there because there's no time. It's quantum. It's like the center point where there's nothing, there's everything. It's that.
Yes,
and
the zero
now
point.
Now quantum physics is now leaning into that. Thank goodness, because it's making it easier for some people to, you know, because they can see there's a science to this. And it has been around since the beginning of time. It's known as the Book of Life in the Bible, the records.
Yes.
The Book of the Dead. Almost every culture has a version, or religion has a version of this idea that what we say and do is recorded in some ethereal realm, some realm. So
we are tapping
in.
It
is who we are being shown to us, which is why it feels so good to be in the records, because we're getting a dose of ourselves. So is it a perspective? It may feel like a perspective, right?
Yes.
Because we're not used to thinking about ourselves in that way, maybe. Or when we learn something that we forgot, it feels new and exciting. So it can feel like a different perspective. So I think it's just language.
Okay. I'm feeling into this. So in your own journey, there has been a lot of information that you have gleaned from in your book. You ask questions and then the records respond. And some of those questions you asked were about, you know, what we're going through in the world, the sixth mass extinction.
Yes.
Coronavirus, everything that's happening. Can we touch into that
in terms of what you experience through the records?
Well, one thing that the records speak about a lot is like what mankind, when mankind touches something that is divine with its mankind's perception, depending on where that, we'll call it an individual, it could be a collective. It can be a pharmaceutical industry. It can be a religious organization. It's like whoever is leading the way in those organizations, where they're coming from, if they have not tapped into or know that they are divine love, that they are love, it's not religious, but they don't know their light and love, then this is really the central theme of a common theme that comes through constantly from the records, is that when we don't know we're light, we take actions that are not of light. So is there darkness? No. There's lack of light. Is there evil? No. There's lack of God, lack of source, or thinking lack of God, you know, believing that. And so when we don't know we are that, because we all are that, we're the same. We're all co-creating on this planet in exactly the same way from the same source. So when we don't know that, we take these actions. So now if you have a collection of these actions on a mass level, then we have something called a coronavirus. Or I'm going to say, because it has come up from the records, vaccines. Vaccines are created, they're manipulated by mankind. And where they're, that's just one example, where some of these are made and how they're made is in the name of money. And in the medical industry, there's plenty of that. I think most people will come to say at this point, yeah, I do see some of it. They may not see it all. Does that mean that they're all harmful? No, of course not. But when we are manipulating divinity itself, or trying to, manipulating nature, taking a plant, bringing it into a laboratory, and then we're going to add different signatures to that plant to turn it into something else, it most likely is, it's not its source anymore, and it's going to probably be harmful. So the records dance around that a little bit with us. Is there a mass extinction? Absolutely not. Not in the way we're being shown. Are things collapsing, what the records talk about? Yes, because this collective ego that has been forming for thousands of years, which is just lack of light, lack of light. It has net. It's it has a perception of itself now, which makes it grow. That ego, which is in so many forms, we have evidence of it around the planet. Wars, that's ego. That can't last because that's not real. What's real is light. Now, as humans, we are seeing these things. So someone could say to me, you're crazy. Look at what's happening. I was like, yes, it's evidence of it. But that is evidence of operating from non-light, non-love, non-compassion, non-source. And so there's that old saying in a lot of movies, the light always wins. The light does win and it will win. I've been shown the new earth. I have been shown it. There is no duality, unity consciousness, love and compassion, no shadows, no need for shadow to see the light, no shadow work. There's none of that. When I was little, I knew this, but I was accused of being kind of stupid and pie in the sky. I thought people were really good, even when people were doing bad things. And my family said, you're just stupid. Wait till you grow up and you see that people are really awful or whatever. And it's like, but I knew. So see, I came in knowing. And that's another thing that we can discover. We always discover this. When we visit our records, we discover that how we came in, how we began, is still who we are. And how we came in, every one of us, is as a ball of light. No matter what we've been through. Yes, we've all had really rough times. That's our human part. But our beings came in that way, and we still are that way. So knowing that, when we know that and we breathe life into that in ourselves, then our actions will come out of that.
Yes, that's the remembering.
That's exactly what the remembering is. Thank you. Mm-hmm. So is the world ending? No. Are massive parts of it ending? Yes. Are people transitioning? Yes, we're seeing a lot of people who are basically saying, I am not going over here to this compassion place, this whatever. They're just, and that's okay. That's part of their soul's journey. They may be leaving because they're going to come back into new earth. We don't know, right? There's always, I mean, there's nothing is random. There's always a reason for something. That's another thing that's very important, and the records emphasize that there is a purpose to everything. Everything makes sense when we look at it from the perspective yes. of not just the records, but the light that we are. Even our trauma will make sense.
Yes,
and that's a tough
the piece.
One.
Yes, we do a lot of trauma healing in my program, and I think that's the piece that is the most helpful in going into the records is having a bigger understanding of why something may have occurred and a broader perspective of the soul's journey beyond just this.
The event.
Even though the developmental wounds are important, there's a thematic emotional link between all of our lifetimes.
There is. Yeah. And they're all still with us, the energy of them. So one yes. thing that the records, as sort of a, I could call it at this point, almost an exercise in most of the readings that most of the people that I help with their records, including myself, is this, we can look at the trauma, and the records are never suggesting that we stare at the trauma, bring it back up, all that. Some therapies will. Records, no. They don't. The divine says, we're not saying that was not painful. We understand the records. The divine realm says that. However, the divine realm suggests that we identify the energy of those traumas, whatever they were. What was the energy? And then if we could separate the energy from the events, we don't want the events to go away because they inform who we are. They're part of our lives. They're part of us. So we don't want to get rid of them. But if we can identify the energy around them, how it happened, and a lot of times it's power, because if somebody shut us down, they were using power to do that. So there's an energy. And then if we're able to separate the energy from the actual trauma, then what's suggested is then we kind of mine that energy or harness it and bring it into the light that who we are today. The light and love that we are. Think of how powerful that is.
Mm-hmm. That's a lot of energy for some people.
It's a lot of energy for some people. And it's only light, because once it's separated from the trauma, energy is not good or bad. It just is. It's not light, dark, good or bad. It just is energy. So knowing that, you could just sort of pull it in and then it becomes power. And we see evidence in that. Not maybe people doing exactly what the records are suggesting, but when you see people who have been, let's say, so interesting to me what people go into in their adult lives, you see somebody who was really shut down. A good friend of mine was told, you talk too much, shut up, like constantly. She was shamed by her family for speaking too much. And she's now like a unity reverend speaking to people.
Yeah.
And sharing, you know, good stuff. And so, or people who become lawyers.
Yes.
Right? And they were totally shut down, or maybe there were really bad people around them growing up. And then they go in and they're human rights attorneys or writers or creators. It's so interesting. They're taking that energy and they're just naturally flowing it right through the higher self.
Yes.
Their higher self.
So a lot of therapists do that too. We become the wounded healer. You know, archetype, right?
Right.
And that word healer, we talked about that at the beginning.
Yeah.
One of the things the records talks about, and this concept of self-healing as opposed to an outside source healing, right? So healing within the records, that's my experience of the records, rather than reading them and getting a narrative, is what within that frequency, what can happen? And,
What happened?
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah. So I had asked your perspective, because in my use of it, I hear song lyrics and then give people a list of songs that they then use that take them on a life journey into these emotions and memories.
Hello, this is Paula Scatoloni. Thank you for listening to the Transformative Harmonics podcast. If this conversation has been interesting,
to you. I invite you to look at our new Transformative Harmonics Academy. I was inspired to create this membership and academy to bring together not only the transformative power of sound, but also a growing global community of faculty and teachers who are coming together to support you on your journey. So together, you will come and meet myself, others who are interested in spiritual growth, embodiment, soulful connection, opening their gifts, and we will gather weekly to explore, embody, and find our signature frequency. If this is interesting to you, feel free to check out the website or make a discovery call with me at paulascatalone.com. And now back to the podcast.
Yes, and that, now let me ask you this. Did music for you growing up in your life, any time in your life, was music important to you?
It was a thing that kept me alive in addition to your soap operas. I kid you not. I was a latchkey kid.
That's
and
great.
And so I used the soap operas to escape, and I used music. I was like a jukebox. So I was just getting music in me all the time because it was around me constantly.
So the reason I asked that question is because it relates to what you're asking. What happens, we want to call healing in the records. I like to call it just expanding, finding, discovering ourselves or rediscovering ourselves. That's really what's happening. So what we're shown when we're in the records, when we are dialoguing, well, either with yourself when you're on your computer and you're hearing and asking, or when I'm with people, the divine moves on the spoken word, spoken thoughts, I guess. And the records show us, we come to see and remember our assets, our talents, the things that always brought us joy. And they remind us, it's the number, like the most common, like I'll call it exercise that the records suggest with all of us is, please go back and remember, even when you were very little, what brought you joy. I don't care if it was sitting in a tree, reading books, doesn't matter. You know, looking at a bug, whatever, playing in the dirt, whatever that was, to look at and almost do a, like a rampage of that, like writing that down and having it look back at you. You will rediscover assets and talents that you have that you forgot. And when people are forming new organizations, this is wonderful to do, to go into the records around this time, around that time of formulating a business. So assets and talents, so you already were resonating with music, so it's not surprising at all that now the higher version of you is bringing that you already know and are familiar with. My higher version, if we call it that, that's just what came to me, is used, why did I go to soap operas? I was watching movies and those saved my life. Who knows? I might have gone down, been in drugs and did horrible things and bad in school or whatever, but I didn't. I went into the imaginations of other people. And so it's not surprising that I moved into scripts and stories that were imaginations. None of those characters were real, were they? But to me, they were. And to the people who watched them, they were. And we owed it to the people to keep those characters, and the actors knew this too, and the writers, to keep those characters alive and well and vibrating through life. So the records show us, they remind us of who we are. They remind us of all these things about us that maybe we forgot, especially one other common thing that comes up is when someone is in a career now and they go to their records over something that they want clarity about. And then they might speak, well, 20 years ago, you know, I was doing that, but now I'm doing this. As if the 20 years ago, what they were doing is on a shelf, in a box, tucked away. And the records, the energy is so loving. It's like this gentle, like, ether pulls them out and says, can we look at those boxes? Can you open up those boxes? Talk about what it felt like when you were doing that 20 years ago. And invariably, there'll be an asset, a hidden asset there, that is part of us that we associated with the career, and the career ended and we shoved it away.
Mm-hmm.
So as an example, I'm writing now fiction. So I didn't grow up writing. My record showed me as a writer. And I went, no. I told my records, no. And then I released my attachment to Yes or No. And then I got offered an opportunity and to be paid to write a screenplay. So see, so we get to, it's so fun.
Yes.
We get to discover our hidden assets. So that's where if we want to call it healing, that's where that expansion happens. And you know, the result is 100% joy, ease and joy. Things are easy.
Yes.
Not difficult.
So so it opens us to the realm of the potential and the possibility that we can't even see, because we are seeing ourselves in this box.
Yes.
We're not seeing ourselves through that lens.
A learned box.
Learned box. And the things that we have done in our life also, I've sat with it lately as if we look across it as a theme, when we talk about soul purpose and why am I here, you can start to see those within those choices that we made when we take a different perspective of looking at who we've been.
It's almost like, if I can say this, when we lose the need to have a perspective, this sounds like Eckhart Tolle talking now, because he speaks of things like this. And they refer to Eckhart, the divine realm refers to him as an ascended master among us, which is not surprising. But it's like when we lose the need to have, and it's almost like losing, not needing to even understand, just experience. And it feels good. And then you experience and it feels good. And then at the end of the day or end of an hour, you go, and that was all me? Yes. Like, that's it.
Yes.
And then the inspired actions come from that.
Yes.
And the thing about soul purpose too is a lot of people ask, and I did too when I was first going into the records, how could any of us manifest being abused when we were children as part of a soul purpose? No, that's not the soul's purpose. The soul's purpose might be to participate in the expansion of love and maybe the discovery of self-love on a certain level. So it is, you mentioned themes. It is a broader theme.
Yeah.
And those experiences, the families, the whatever happens, good and bad, they all play into, as you were saying, we discover how they all fit that larger picture that we chose, that larger theme.
Yes. Which helps us with meaning making and understanding that there's so much more to being here than just getting up, going to work, watching TV at night and going to sleep, which is, that's the hamster wheel everyone's on.
It is. And the planet is spinning around. A lot on the planet is spinning around. But you know, it's interesting. I've also been shown that because that's what we see, we think that's what is, when really there's more of not the hamster wheel.
Yes.
And that's a tough one because people go, well, come on. And it's like, well, if we sit and talk long enough, we'll see. We will see that there's more of the other.
Yes.
Just there's a smaller number of that or amount of that. And it's so, like, it's so palpable, maybe. It's just, how can you not see it, right?
Yes.
I mean, we all do this. I wake up on days and I've got away from news. And I started working in news years ago. But I just can feel the planet confused. I feel people lost, confused. I notice it when I'm out and about. I can feel somebody lost. I can just feel it. And I don't know them personally, so I can't just go and grab them and hug them. I probably should, and future Earth we will be. But it's obvious at times. And I feel sad. And I don't know if you experience this. There are times where I just have sadness over people harming each other. That's the part I never understood when I was little. I don't understand people hurting each other.
I had that as well. I it was a confusion about humans and why humans do what they do.
Me too.
It was very, I felt very lost and alone as a child.
Me too.
Which a lot of us do. Yeah, a lot of us do, because we can't fathom why people would make the choices that they make to hurt people.
And especially even when you're old enough and you can say to someone, well, you don't have to do that. Why are you doing that? And they just keep doing it. And even then you walk away going, don't they see that it's actually nicer, feels better to not have to do that? Why are we still killing? You tell me.
Yes. I think it's a lot to hold. I do believe there's a piece of helping people who are still in the throes of coming out of that density and unlight, so that it's the space holding. So as every new person comes in and moves out of it, and where the space is, and this is a space we create for them to make those choices.
Mm-hmm. Abraham Hicks saying at some point, well, they probably still say it's lonely on the leading edge.
It is. It's definitely.
It can be. But then just think of, this is what I do. I practice with what I learned from the records, which is when I am feeling that like loneliness, I think of something that brings me joy, or I look for an example in real life of beauty, of somebody doing something wonderful. The examples are out there. The stories are out there.
Yes.
We have to search a little bit for them, but eventually I think that's going to tip. And Hollywood is kind of hasn't tipped yet. I'll just say that.
Getting ready, hopefully. Yeah, I like to think of these little moments that we might pass by them on a given day. Like we found a stray dog, and one might think, oh, that's irritating. Now I have to do this in my week, and I'm taking care of another dog, and I'm adding it into the things I'm doing. But if we view it from, okay, so what is the universe trying to show me here? What's happening with this intersection of this being and me? And can I be with it I'm moving through something spiritual right now? Can I be with it and notice what it is? Even creating that space, did we get the download of what it's about? This is something is happening for a reason right now.
That's because you're asking. Yeah. Because you're asking it. That's why that happens.
Mm. Yes.
That's beautiful. And that's a good reminder. Just stop for a moment and ask.
Yes. Why is this happening? Or what? Not in a why is this happening, but how is this happening for me? How is this happening to support me? It's beautiful. I do want to make sure, what are the other things I want to talk about? So one of the things you've talked about for yourself is shifting into writing. And I like to think about, people may call it channeling their higher selves or getting in flow or allowing creativity to move through you, writing being one of those ways that we tap into source, right? And to normalize, I think, the ways in which source might speak through us, or we might converse with source.
Make it more recognizable.
Yes. And so do you find, you know, people asking you, are you speaking about that much as you move into writing and the place you go when you're writing and that process?
Well, I'm not speaking. Do you mean when you ask, am I speaking about that?
Podcasts or is this a new, this is a question I have that I haven't heard you speak about. It's creativity and channeling and connecting.
Well, I'm glad you are asking that. No, well, because most of the podcasts I've been on haven't asked that, I guess, because I pretty much, you know, fall into what it is they want to talk about. And so one thing that I love that I discovered was Elizabeth Gilbert's book, Big Magic. And she talks about this yes. She talks about creativity itself and the essence of it, and that it exists in the ethers, floating around the ethers looking for its match. And I always use Harry Potter as an example. I imagine that's how it started. So there's an essence. This is the creative process, and this is how it works for me. And so it's out there, and then we have to be in a space of receiving. We have to be not looking, but just sort of we have to be in the now. So we're in the now, and it's when I'm sitting doing nothing. I'm not planning to do nothing. I don't plan to write. I be. and for me, I might look at birds off my porch in the back, and I just stare at, you know, I'm looking at them, and I'm just in there, whatever. And then all of a sudden, it comes in. I get something. And I know that essence, whatever it, in the form of an idea. Or it might be maybe I've been working on something and then all of a sudden out of nowhere, it always feels like it's out of nowhere. This just comes in and I'll see one of my characters doing something and I'll be like, oh, whoa. It 100% for me comes out of that space of nothingness, right? And that's why I think a lot of people we'll talk about writing for now, who are writers, they'll say, oh, I sit there and sometimes nothing comes in and, and hours go by and it's like, well, then don't sit there. Just go be somewhere, right? So I do believe that these essences come in and they match up with us. And then we think we had the idea when really it's a co-creation with something outside of ourselves that is existing in some other form.
Yes.
And when I read that book, and there's a funny part in that book that Elizabeth Gilbert talks about, which is a lot of times we get these ideas and we start putting energy and time into them, and then we stick it on the shelf for whatever reason. It could be we don't think we're worthy. Who knows? That's your work. You dig in and you realize, wait a minute, why'd you put that on a shelf? And what she describes is that the essence of the idea sits in the corner, filing its nails, waiting for you to take it off the shelf. And if you don't, metaphorically, then it leaves and it goes back to the ethers and finds its match. And when it does another match and that person takes off with it, then we go, oh, they stole my idea. And that's not what happened at all. So I love that it is this co-creative process. And frankly, I like it because then there's not all this pressure on me, you know, to do the right thing in writing a characters or a story or whatever. And so that's the fun of it. There's so much more. You had said this earlier. There's so much more to life itself than we have been told up until now and that are in the books.
Yes.
If we just stand still.
Yes.
So that's my process. And then what happens is, when I get something, then I'll go to my desk or whatever, wherever I am, and I'll just start flushing it out. And as it starts to have a life of its own, I remember Madeline L'Engle, I was in a Barnes & Noble one day before she died, and all these children were around her. She was one of my favorite writers. And Madeline and one of the children said, Miss L'Engle, how do you decide what your characters are going to do? And she said, well, I don't. They tell me what they're going to do. I always remember that. And I was an adult hanging out with all these kids in the Barnes & Noble with a children's writer. I love that. That is what happens. It starts to speak to you. And even the essence of the whatever you're creating, it begins to speak to you.
Yes.
And I find that really fun. But that could be my imagination. I love my imagination and I'm not afraid of it. I find maybe sometimes people are afraid of their imaginations because it can take off. And I think we should allow our imaginations to take off.
Mm-hmm. That's what we did as children, right? Being in relationship with the field itself, which is pure creativity and potential.
Pure potential. Anything is possible and everything is possible. And the records bring that idea, exactly what you said, that reminder to everybody I work with, including myself. Like, just let go. Go back to being a child. Let the child in you come out.
Yes.
Let her run the show. You know,
don't
be afraid to let your child run the show.
Yes.
Because children, they know, they don't run off cliffs. They actually know. I believe they know a lot because they're closer to source time-wise. They just came from there.
Yeah. I agree. Thank you for bringing some levity to, I do a lot of work with people with inner child and developmental healing, and it can get so heavy. And I love that we're just talking about play and some of these, you know, basic principles that people can go back to. It doesn't always have to be serious healing. It doesn't always have to be heavy. It doesn't always have to be the trauma piece of it, right? How do we balance that?
And actually the trauma piece transmutes when we are spending more time in joy. It just automatically does. And we have evidence of that. If we're having a bad day because of trauma stuff, and we know what that is, it could be behavior, it could be our families, whatever. And then all of a sudden, I mean, I've had this happen where then my niece pulls me out of something, not intentionally. She just needs my attention and it's light and it's crazy and whatever. All of a sudden, when I look back at if it was my family, and I have had that happen, I'm like, eh. All of a sudden, the charge is out of it. I'm like, wow.
Mm. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah. The ability for the children to shift our frequency, something like that. Music for me does that.
Music does it. Yeah. 900% of the time.
Yes.
My life is at the core of my life is music. And I always loved music from all around the world. I've had people say, what's your favorite music? And I cannot answer that question.
I'm like that as well. Appreciation. I had one time I had told my daughter I could dance to any kind of music. And so she put on everything she could think of.
Oh, I love that.
And there was only one that was like some very deep metal. I don't even know what it's called.
Probably like grunge, yeah, grungy.
It was something.
Yeah, you can't dance to that. No. it's tough.
But I appreciate that. Yeah, I did hear on a podcast that you were a musician at one point.
Well, I studied. It's interesting. I grew up, my mother was an organist and I was very close with her. And so she played music. I grew up hearing classical music in our house. When my father, who was drunk all the time, was at work, those were our joyful times. And so I have memories of that. And then I think on some level, when I went to college, I started playing at 13 years old classical guitar. I always loved classical music growing up. And so I found a college where I could major in that, but I also wanted to teach. So I majored in music education. So I continued to play classical guitar and I was studying with someone in New York City because I was in school in New York. And then I noticed that I had to practice twice as long as people who were next to me, around me, who were going on to be professional musicians. And I realized like, this is not my thing, right? And I mean, to this day, I love classical music, but I outgrew it. But I think what happened was, I think I went into music because it was the thing I was used to and because of my love and connection with my mother. So like, could I say it's her fault that I studied music? Maybe, and I'm happy about it because I love music and I learned more about it. But it wasn't it. And I find college and the systems that take young people into them and they require them to know what it is they want to be and do, I think that's challenging for young people because then they have that feeling if the thing that they spent 3 years studying, look at the kids that have gone in medical school and they come out and they're like, I don't want to do that. I want to be an environmentalist. And then they feel guilty and all that money went into it. So I wish that the education system would be more like Montessori, like more
yes.
Like in year one of college, really feeling into what are you drawn to? Who are you really about? The work that you're doing. If there was more of that happening at that age in the educational system, oh my gosh, I think we have a lot happier young people.
Yeah, more spaciousness and more of that. Well, the play, which is what we've talked about. Where do you want to? Because that's going to be where your natural talents also emerge.
That's the secret. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And the permission.
Yes.
Which is a lot of the undoing that's happening right now because we've all gotten into, I think, a very rigid perspective of what are the careers to get or what makes the money or rather than what brings me joy.
How often do you have clients or people that you work with that come to you and say, I wanted to be a dancer. I wanted to be a ballet dancer. I wanted to be a singer. I wanted to be a writer. And it goes on and on. I wanted to be an actor or actress, but my parents told me you won't make money. What if this, what if that? My own wife, that was her story. And she's an actress. And her father was like, no.
Mm.
She wanted to go into the arts. And he said, no.
Yeah. Yeah. It's common. I worked at Duke University. And what I saw a lot was, you know, when you get accepted to prestigious institutions and if you get there and you find out it's not a good fit or the path, to be at prestigious institutions, there's a sense of being trapped.
See?
Like yeah. You can't make another, and there's a huge disappointment in letting parents down that comes with the elite.
Isn't that a shame? It's just a shame.
Yeah.
And that because what happens is then, this is what the records show too. No matter what, whatever our soul's journey has been or why we came here, we're always going to get to that anyway, right? So not that that would be a waste. That's going to play into something, obviously, even if they found out they didn't like it and it was painful during that time. But then it might be 10, 20, or 30 years later, right, that they come into knowing. But then we can look at those times not as a waste or a mistake. This is what we do in the records, and see maybe that experience of being at an elite college or university and not really liking it is going to help others, because now you're going to be the voice of that, of don't feel trapped, or don't, you know, to help prevent people from feeling trapped.
Yes.
I mean, it could have a role. It will have a role.
There's all sorts, I think, of coming back to the Akashic, of what we can then learn about the challenging times in our lives and why those were happening, if
yes.
we want to bring it back. So why,
yes.
why go to an Akashic Records reader? Why learn your own, learn about the Akashics yourself? So do you have any thoughts or things we want to say at the end in terms of people doing this on their own versus getting an appointment with you, and where do people start?
So it's a great question. So, okay, it kind of looks like from my book and when I talk about my journey that I tumbled into them or was dragged into them, but I wasn't. I was obviously already, even when I was born, when I was very little, I sensed, when I would sit in church, I sensed something that felt, I felt something loving me. I remember this being really little, first, second grade. And then later, I had the same feeling, and it's the Akashic Records. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I already knew that. So my experience with the Akashic Records as a resource, there's many resources. There are many resources. That's one, is that people come to their own records. That's been my experience. I don't run around suggesting people go to their records. I never have. They come to their own records as I did. I came to my own records. You may have too. So we're drawn to them. And so there's always a reason. And we come to find out why when we are in our records. So my answer to your question about, like, what do people do is, if it resonates, you know, look at what happens when we hear people, we hear podcasts, or we see things, or we see movies even. Something resonates with us and we're walking around and we kind of can't stop thinking about it. Well, when that happens, and if that happens about the Akashic Records, then I suggest read about them or hear people speak about them, right? And the more once I read Linda's book, I was like, bang, that's something I'm home. And so that's the beginning. You just surround yourself with everything about the Akashic Records, right? And then I always suggest getting books. I mean, the only one I know that really so far was the most helpful was Linda Howe's book, because she's such a beautiful person and how she leads us to the beauty of this essence called the records, how loving it is, how beautiful it is. It's in her book. Well, it's coming through her. I felt it. And when I felt it, and then I come to realize I'm feeling myself, and I went, wow, this is really big. So read Linda Howe's book,
yeah.
Any of them. I think she's written like 7 now.
Great.
And that's what you do. And then if you feel you want to experience your own records, some people just need, when they hear about the records, they want to clear things up. They want to process trauma. They're stuck in their lives. They don't know their soul's purpose. Those are the main reasons people come for readings. If you're feeling that, then yes, come for a reading or find a practitioner that you resonate with. That's very important. The records will not tell you what to do, but they're going to show you who you are. And in seeing that, there's just going to be this ease that you have about, and a familiarity about who you are. And then it naturally will unfold that you will know why you're here. So if you need that, then you go and have a reading.
Okay. Great. So your book, The Akashic Way, Living Through the Lens of the Akashic Records is out now. You're currently working on a second book. Is that right? About working with land?
No, but I will be doing that too. Sacred Spaces. The second book is about the power of crisis through the lens of the records.
Okay.
And it was beginning to become birthed through my living through Hurricane Helene down here in North Carolina. And I gifted readings to people who were going through this, like, why did this happen to them? And out of that came amazing stuff. I'm almost finished with that book. And then the record showed me, kind of like they showed me writing, they showed me going to sacred places, lesser known sacred spaces on the planet, and literally opening the Akashic records of those places.
Okay.
So that would be another one, which could be really powerful.
Fascinating. Yeah. I'm interested in that. I've been called to work with land lately, and I'm in North Carolina as well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you are? Mm-hmm. I didn't know that.
I'm in Durham.
Oh, I'm in Black Mountain.
Oh, okay.
Outside of Asheville.
Okay.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
we'll see if we cross
what
paths.
Are you being called? Well, I mean, I don't know if we, what are you being called to do with land? Hear it?
Well,
hear it?
I have a group that's forming organically where we can hear what's needing to clear trauma. And much of it is we're gleaning indigenous trauma that's still held in the land. And so we're walking on a lot of land right now and just listening and starting to consider what we might do as a group.
Oh, that's beautiful. Speaking of land, I came to this area because my father-in-law was dying with cancer. And so we wanted to be closer to him. He lived in South Carolina. And I wasn't resonating with South Carolina. So we come here because Asheville felt really good. So we found Black Mountain. Now, gorgeous here. North Carolina's gorgeous. I was feeling something. I was really, really feeling something's not right here. So I opened the Akashic records of exactly where I live and Black Mountain. And what I received, I probably wrote it as a reading. What I heard was there's war energy underneath your feet.
Yes.
And then I went to history. Not that I had to prove it, but it's very interesting when you correlate the two. And I looked at what was going on here, and it was the indigenous and things that were happening. And so then I heard, and I don't know if you've gotten this, even further below and even metaphorically below, that sounds right, Atlantis. And that the energy of Atlantis in the Asheville area is here. And it's interesting because Asheville attracts energy healing outside, you know, more ethereal stuff, technologies, and that's actually Atlantis. Now, of course, we hear Atlantis is really the Bimini and those areas, but who says that's where it is? 'Cause the things that we've been told and that are in history,
yes.
I keep hearing that's not necessarily the way things happened.
Yes. Well, I've been hearing that there's renditions of Lemurian Atlantis. And so there's like the first one, the second one, the third one, and they're in different parts of the world. So that's, you may be tapping into that.
It could be.
Yeah.
It could be.
Yeah.
But yes, the land has,
okay.
The earth has answers and holds the information. Gaia has all the information about anything we want to know.
Yes. Well, I'm looking forward to that book and to chatting more and learning more about that as you get more information. Well, hopefully stay in touch now
yes.
that we've connected. And this has been such a pleasure. Where can people find you if they want to find more information?
Well, my website is theakashicway.com. That's pretty simple. And you can email me at mary@theakashicway.com.
Wonderful.
And the book is on Amazon and now the Targets and all those online.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Well, I highly recommend it. It was a wonderful read.
Thank you.
And to continue to follow you and see what you're doing in your new books. And it was a pleasure to sit with you today, Mary.
Same here, Paula.
And share space with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for being a part of the Transformative Harmonics podcast. If this discussion resonated with you, please subscribe, share the episode, or write a review. This helps to support the expanding community around embodiment, sound, and conscious living. You can visit Transformative Harmonics at paulascatoloni.com to find out more about my work, forthcoming classes, and the Transformative Harmonics Academy. You can also reach out and connect with me on Instagram. My handle is at paulascatoloni. I write regularly on Substack at Signature Frequency Living. Until next time, take good care, and thank you for being part of the journey.